Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
At the moment, I'm still a lobby player, which is the main thing. Contract negotiations always happen sort of behind closed doors and stuff like that, so that's not something that I really talk about too much.
Top answer, because this is a training. You're learning well.
I'm not going to talk into that too much.
Like the agent, deal with that behind the scenes.
Yeah, you learn about something
to tell us. You'll tell us.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Beautiful Game Podcast. I'm with my main man, Dej. What are you saying to me, bro?
I'm good, my bro. You know, today we're breaking a record. You know, the youngest ever player to appear on TBG. So we're looking forward to it because it's going to be a new experience. So, yeah, man.
No, definitely. And one of the remits and, you know, things that we've always said about this platform is that we want to get every single sort of journey and story to be heard on this platform. But before we introduce our guests, I just want to plug the socials. Follow our TikTok at TBGpod, our Twitter at podcast_TBG, and our Instagram that's been blowing up at the moment at pod_TBG. Like the video, subscribe, and leave a comment because that helps the algorithm. And the more subscribers we get, the bigger guests that come onto the platform. We're delighted to announce we are joined by Carlos Richards.
Welcome,
thank
bro.
You, thank you.
Welcome, man.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, love for coming on. As we've said, like, we've been speaking off air, just talking about your journey. You're still a young player, so it's going to be good to like find out the origins because there's not much online. So I believe this is your first sort of interview in front of the bright lights and the cameras. Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be good to chop it up, man.
No, definitely. And big up, obviously, Jerry, for helping put this together. It's been a joy to work with, so we appreciate that. So, yeah, let's kick things off. Take us back to the beginning.
So, my roots of into football has been up and down, really. It's been slow, whereas I think I started playing grassroots football, Sunday league football, for probably most of my time when I was younger. I mean, I got into football at the age of like 6, sort of. Just like a local team, really, just getting used to it, just enjoying it, really. That's the main sort of thing when you're younger, is enjoyment. You're not really into it like that. But and then when my family started actually realising, okay, it's quite good, try pushing on. So I had a few good coaches in my team when I was younger. Shout out, so his name is Mark Dunn and Charlie Dunn. They were sort of quite helpful for me when I was younger. They had good links into academies and stuff like that, which was all new to me when I was little, really. So just playing for like a Sunday league team from probably the age around 6, 7 to 10 sort of thing, just like a local team. And then I started getting some notice from academies, from like the likes of Chelsea, which is obviously where I was, Arsenal for you. So it was just like good for me. And then from that point onwards, I went on trials. I was at Brighton for a bit, under 10s, I think that would have been. I was at Fulham for a bit as well. And then obviously I went on trial at Chelsea, I think under 12s, I think it was at first. And this is something that people might not even know. I didn't, when I first went on trial at Chelsea, I didn't actually get into the club.
Okay.
So that was sort of something like people don't really know about. But I went on trial at Chelsea under 12s, and it was all positive information, but it was sort of just like squad sizes at the time was different. It just wasn't really the right time for me. So I sort of just said, look, you go back to doing whatever you was doing before, and if the opportunity arises, it'll be good for you. So that was a bit hard for me at a young age. So I get told that's the first sort of no I had for me, obviously, which is no one's going to take it on well. But went back to Sunday League after that, after having academy sort of notice. And then went back to Sunday League for about half a year maybe. I went back to Chelsea at under 13s and I just did well, really. I had a good sort of 6-week trial sort of spell there. And that sort of changed their opinion on me. And then got offered a contract at Chelsea when I was about 13, 14. And that's just sort of where it started, really, for me. I think from Chelsea, where it was just like from going from Sunday League right at the bottom to Chelsea, it's a big sort of jump. So something I had to get used to over time. But
so what kind of things, like, you see, obviously the obvious one is quality, but in terms of, I don't know, facilities, pitches, equipment, stuff like that?
That's facilities is a massive thing. I think when you guys probably understand, when you're at academies or you step down to Sunday League grassroots, you realise how much you really respect the facilities and stuff like that. I mean, just seeing the amount of pitches they had there, the facilities, even canteen for your parents could come and sit down. I think it was just like from there to there. But I think the whole experience being at Chelsea was just great for me and my family, really, just to be able to get used to a place like that around players or around massive calibres and stuff like that. But it was just great for my personal development as well, just being in and around a good sort of programme where I'm training a good few times a week and building myself up like that. But yeah, I was at Chelsea for about two, three seasons. And then I got to sort of under 16s and I picked up a few injuries, which is obviously that's probably my worst thing at the moment. I think I've picked up a few, so it was a bit more of a struggle for me when I got to around the age of 15, 16 at Chelsea. And then this decision sort of came around the corner and it was another no, which was another, like I said, another step back for me. Obviously being in there for about two seasons, it was a big sort of knock. But it's either you let that affect you and you sit down or you carry on going. So I had trials at other places. I got my first agent, which was another big thing for me, for them to open doors for me elsewhere. And
so even before your journey through the academies, I want to go right the way back. So even like, what area are you from? I know you're from London, like what?
So just outside South London, near sort of Kingston area, where I grew up. I'm lucky enough to say that I grew up with both my parents. Okay. So, and I have a younger sister as well. So I have a good sort of family around me, good supportive family who have the drive for me, sort of thing. So, no, and my area didn't grow up in a rough area. It was a nice area, so I haven't got...
It's funny because footballers grow up in different environments. Yeah. Some come from like harsh environments where it's like really gritty, and obviously to hear that you've come from a two-parent household in a decent area, that's good.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, there's some people who come from a lot of different backgrounds, so for me that's a massive positive for me to be able to say, you know, I lived up with in a nice area, lived up with two parents who actually wanted to push me. So, I mean, there's loads of people you guys probably had in this podcast before who haven't had that. And I think that's a big thing for me, family.
And what would you say that's done for you? So, like, obviously you mentioned earlier about getting rejected from Chelsea for the first time. And, like, how is having two supportive parents helped you get over those sort of rejections?
I think it's... Honestly, it's massive for me. I think family, massive. I think if I didn't have my parents, my dad, my mum to speak to in those times, I think I don't know where I'd be today. So I think I don't know if I'd still be playing at the same level I am now, or I don't think I would have been able to push myself to get those opportunities. So I'm always happy that, or glad that they're there for me like that and they're able to push me, because I don't know, like I said, I don't know where I'd be without them. So one of the main things for me, my family.
Because I know you mentioned you started playing when you were like under six, went into Sunday League. So like, how did you get into football? How did, or who saw that you had potential to like?
That's another sort of weird story, really. So when I was around six, I used to go to just like a local goals and stuff like that, just like little places. I think it was a birthday party I had when I was six or seven. I'm not sure the age, and there was coaches who came in and took the birthday party, and they sort of just said, look. We'll give him, he can come in and he can train at our place, blah, blah, blah. And that's where it all started, really. That's when I got into a little program. I think it was maybe every Tuesday, Thursday, you know, come down and train. Started playing futsal as well, which was...
Okay, yeah. Was a lot of people talk about how that's massive, a big help. Like people like Coutinho, like the tight touches, playing under pressure, manipulating the ball and that.
to grow your technical ability, I think it's great for young players to get into futsal, or at least to experience it, because, you know, it's a different, it might look very similar, but it's very different. It's a lot quicker. I think you need the technical ability to be able to play in a sport like that. So I think that was good for me when I was younger to get involved and stuff like that. But
because you mentioned, like, you went to Chelsea. Obviously, they said there was an overpopulated group, so they had to obviously get rid of players. So, like, in that intervening period, what did you do to work on your game? Like, what information did they tell you that you need to work on this, then you can become part of the squad?
Well, I think for me, it was more in my position as an attacking player, as a winger, it's always end product is always the main sort of question mark on any player. All right, yeah, we know he has a technical ability, we know he's quick or whatever, but has he got that end product to really sort of show his ability when he does step on the pitch? And for me, I think that was my main sort of thing, just being able to look back at a season and look at my stats and think, okay, I've had a good season here because I've had so-and-so goals, so-and-so assists, or something on paper where you can look and think, yeah, I've done well this year. So I think that was the main thing for me, to just go back, work hard on my own product, you know, just making sure I'm getting my tally up, involving other people and stuff like that. But it's more
so what's your view on, like, stats? Because I speak to a lot of players in the modern game, and people are sort of like, even if I have a bad game but I get a goal or assist, that's my job done. Whereas in the old school days, about putting in the performances kind of thing. So where do you stand in that as a young player?
For me, I know I touched on it there, but stats aren't really important for me. I don't think that's something I personally don't really look into. I know it can be a big nowadays, everyone's saying, oh, so and so, but his stats are like this. But I don't think so. For me, if I play bad and I score, I disregard that. I still think I played bad today. I'm not going to... For me, a goal or an assist, that doesn't change how I personally think I played. I think it has a difference how people see
perceive.
You.
Yeah, exactly.
People outside, just look at the stats.
Yeah. Exactly. Someone might look at the game and think, oh, Carlos scored today. He had a good game then. Yeah. but in my head, I'm like, I played horrible today. Yeah. But just because I got a goal, someone might see it differently. So I think stats do perceive sort of how people do see that. Mm. People might see two goals and think, oh, I played great. But I think you have to be there, or you have to be involved in football to know about stuff like that. But stats, nah, I don't really look into it too much.
No, I think this conversation is very pertinent, because we've got, like, a lot of 13, 14, 15-year-olds listening to the platform that are aspiring to make that next step from being in Sunday League to go into academies and potentially making their pro debut at 17, 18, 19. So I just wanted to ask you, like, how did you juggle school with football?
So I don't know if you guys know, well, of course you would, that, I mean, when you're younger, you get given the opportunity, especially at top football clubs like Chelsea, you get the opportunity to go full time at the club. So all your school programs are funded by them and sorted by them. You go to a local school, but you're sort of like 100% at the club, which is, I think that's around 15 sort of time. Whereas I didn't do that, and I think that's a great choice that I made personally. I feel like having that school experience of going to school, making friends, you know, if people from your area, I think that's great. But like you said, balancing it between football and schoolwork, I think school is obviously really important, but in the back of my mind, I always knew exactly what I wanted to do. So I'd always know, okay, I want to put my 100% into football, but I'm also going to balance my schoolwork with football, because you've got to stay on top of it. You've got to have a plan B, like everyone always says. But for me, obviously, my main goal was always football, but to make sure I was on top of it in school, make sure my grades were good, I was passing my exams, I was doing well. That was also positive for me. And my mum's also a teacher, so it was one of those ones where...
True, our extra lessons at home.
Well. So if I'm not doing well, I'd know about it. So
is it one of those ones that if you wasn't doing well, no football kind of thing? Or was there always saying, you know what, this guy, you got mad talent. Like, we're going to accept. Yeah. Was it one of those ones?
Nah, not really. I think my parents weren't really too harsh on me. I think they sort of knew that I wouldn't take the mic. I'd be good in school and stuff like that. But I think if I was sort of one of those cheeky sort of characters that would have been stomped out quite a long time ago. But I still think, for like you said, people who are watching who say, oh, I'm struggling balancing between school and football, I think when you know football is all you want to do, I think put your 100% into that, but always make sure you're keeping on top of your schoolwork along the side, because you don't know where that will take you otherwise.
I wanted to speak about, you mentioned before, like, overcoming rejection. Obviously, you had it the first time around at Chelsea, then you had it again, obviously being released. Like, how do you deal with that? Because I think you know, people sort of talk about Gen Z as like the snowflake generation. Yeah. They don't know how to handle adversity. Like,
definitely.
People quit their jobs, I don't know, 10 times in a year. The manager.
I've been looking at the stats again.
Yeah, so like, speaking to people of your generation, like, how did you do it? Because people are of the perception that people are getting less and less and less resilient, if you get what I'm saying. So how did you do it?
I think the first time when I was younger, I think it was good that I got that when I was younger to sort of get that first no. Because then that's where you sort of see where yourself are, how interested you are in that sort of thing. Because when you get told no, it's a big thing. And it's either you can step up from that and you can go, okay, I'm going to prove them wrong. Or you get that opinion from someone, you think, oh, I'm gonna change that. Or you could just step away from it and think, look, that's not me. I think I'm looking to something else. But rejection's a massive thing, and I think it can change you as well, massively. I feel like it can change you. I feel like it can push you on, and it can give you that drive to do better and succeed better to what you were doing before. So when I first got that no, it's probably one of the worst things to do at the time. You know, you want to just go into your bed, stay in your room. You don't really want to tell anyone. You just want to be by yourself. But you lift yourself up from that, and then you get opportunities elsewhere, which I think I'm happy to say where I am, where I am now. And I'd say being released from Chelsea has probably helped me, to be honest, to be who I am now, really.
Because after you left Chelsea, there's that sort of window where, what do I do? I'm going into clubs, or rejected there, or they say, we'll give you 2 weeks. After the 2 weeks, you don't hear back from them. Oh, we've got to look for other opportunities. Yeah. So talk to us about that sort of window of uncertainty as well.
So that sort of period, that summer, sort of just after the season's ended, that period can be quite hard, really, because you're thinking about, I have to stay fit, ready for the next season. But then I also don't have a club, so I have to go on trials and things like that. So it can be quite hectic. But I just got an agent as soon as I got released from Chelsea. So that opened up a few sort of pathways and windows for me to be able to go elsewhere. So I think I went to Rangers. No, it would have been West Ham I went first, actually. Okay. I went West Ham. I think I was there for a good few games. And being able to know that I was getting interest from still top clubs like that, I think that was a positive for me to be able to know, okay, it's definitely not the end of the road here. You know, you still got a lot of potential, still got other clubs that are in for you. So it kept my head up for me. And I did well at West Ham. I enjoyed it there, but it wasn't the club for me. So I went.
So when you say it wasn't the club for you, did they make you an offer that you rejected, or they just said they went quiet, or how was that?
I think so. I was there for around, I can't remember the exact time. I was there for a few weeks, and I felt like I was doing well. I was hearing positive feedback from the club, and then I think I just had one shocker of a game. I think I was playing with the 18s. I think it wasn't a league game, but it was like just a game that they'd put together that I played in, and I just played horrible.
So do you know that? Because
I know it myself.
Obviously, I used to play academy football, and obviously Dot's been my best friend for a while. And I'll phone him after certain games, like, Dot, I had a man, like, I got hooked off at halftime.
Yeah, so, yeah, got subbed off or got dragged off everything.
Yeah, like, you know.
Yeah, like, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely, after that, yeah, you know. But yeah, after that game, I just sort of said, look, I knew after the full-time whistle went, I haven't shown myself today. So I just thought, after that, we didn't really hear much back from the club, really. It sort of went quiet, so I looked elsewhere. You know, you can't really just throw all your eggs in one basket, like they say, and just stay at one club, because then you put your time effort into one place, and then the decision is no, you've got nowhere else to go. So there's a few clubs lined up to go on from there. So I think I went to Rangers after, which was another crazy story. We was doing testing just as soon as I got there, like a sprint test, jump test and stuff like that, just to sort of test your body, how quick you are, see if you're quick and stuff like that. And off the 30-meter sprint, I think it was, I did my hamstring.
Oh.
And it was like, I had to go back to the hotel, and I'm in Scotland, where I don't know.
Foreign country,
exactly,
different.
And I'm injured, and I thought, oh, where does it go from here? But I just took time to build myself back up again, and opportunity arose at Derby, and that's where I am today.
Yeah, it's like you've been around the houses to like get to opportunity, and I think this is what people don't see. On the TV, they see under 16 making his debut, say, wow, this is the next prodigy, but they don't know what you've had to go through.
Yeah, definitely. So I think there's loads of players who are like that, I think, who have that sort of pathway where you just see them doing well, but you don't really see where they've come from or what it's taken for them to get there.
Even Malcolm, who came on for your debut, he sort of got released, he went around, got his opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's, like you said, the word opportunity is massive in football. I think everyone gets an opportunity, and it's just whether you take it or not, really. You could, like you say, you could have a shocker one day, or you could perform and then you get pushed on. And I think for Malcolm, that was a big thing when he came to Derby. He hit the ground running, did well as an age group, and excelled in a championship at the time. Mm. So, and he's in a great place now. So, it shows.
So, talk to us about, you know, signing for Derby.
So, yeah, when I got there, it was another, like, sort of trial period where I played, I think, 2 games. Yeah. And I scored a great goal in one of the games, and I was just sort of thinking, you know, I do like the facilities here.
So when you say scored a great goal, what does this great goal look like? Let's hear what you're about.
Running back. So I think it was against like a college, I think. I think it was for the 21. So I was just turned 16 at the time.
Wow.
So for me, it's like I'm playing against, not men, but I'm playing against, you know, physically developed, big sort of players. I'm thinking, it's going to be a bit different for me. But I just remember it. I was playing on the right-hand side, ball come down, down the line, and I just took on about 3 players, got into the box and slotted it.
Was it one of the whips, or was it like what type of finish?
So I've driven into the box, I've chopped, defender slid, and I've got the whole goal to aim. I've just placed it.
What sort of corner. Defender was on the floor?
He was,
yeah. I don't want to see you, man.
I think he saw my number from that point onwards and just left it from there. Yeah. So I went Derby, and that was, had a good trial period. And then when I first got offered the initial contract, I just thought, I'm taking it. You know, I've enjoyed my time here. I've enjoyed the club. I've enjoyed the facilities, everything. And I just thought, it's a step, not a step down, but it's different to Chelsea, but I liked it and it suited me. So it was just perfect. And I think that's one of the best things I've done, really, signing for Derby.
So when you say you were offered a contract, is that scholar, is that pro?
So that was a 2-year scholarship when I first signed for Derby, where they had, I don't know if you've heard, but obviously they had financial stuff going with the club and point deductions and stuff like that. So it was a tough period for them. But for me to just, any contract was a contract. Anything was good for me, whether a pro, scholarship, whatever it was, I was happy. As long as I wasn't having to travel or, you know, commitment to any other clubs, anything like that. That was just what I needed at the time. But yeah, having signed that initial contract, you know, at my age, earning actually money for playing the sport that I love doing, that was a massive, massive thing for me, where I feel more independent in myself. I'm living away from family. And
so were you staying in like digs? Because I know a lot of players stay with different families, then the club will sort of monitor their development and the family sort of report back to the club, he's doing well, he's coming in late on Saturday nights, he's sneaking through the back door and stuff. But I know you're not like that. I know you're a good guy.
Of course. But so I'm still in digs now.
Yeah.
Just putting in a digs. And I think that's a massive thing as well. Where you're staying is a really big thing, I think. I think if you're in a good environment and you're going home where you're happy, I think that's massive. I think that does have an effect on how you perform on the pitch and stuff. So I think I'm in a good house where, you know, they treat me well. They also prepare me well for games and stuff like that. So that's all I can ask for, really.
So how is that set up? Because again, we're going to have like people listening in that are at that age. Mm. So do you get assigned to a family, or when you're there, they sort of list, okay, these are the sort of family, this is where they're from, which house do you want to go to, kind of? How does it work?
So I think it depends on the club, really, because when I went up to Rangers, it was sort of just like, you know, they speak to you, think, oh, do you like pets? Is it something that you'd want in your house? Would you want a house that has siblings in it, or, you know, like a family that you can enjoy? But when I first came to Derby, it just sort of like said, like, this is the way where we want you to go down. And obviously, if you're not happy, you're unsettled anywhere, they'll happily move you out like that within a day. You'd be somewhere else. But I went there and my family got able to meet the Dix parents, and it was just perfect for me, really. It's not too far away from the training ground, so I have to get a driver in every morning actually as well,
because you haven't got your license.
still trying to get that sorted as well, which Jerry's on top of me for as well. we don't talk about that for now, but the Dix parents is all good. But it's, yeah, like you said, the club do money, they do checks and stuff like that, but It's not something to be worried about, really. It's just that they're making sure that you're eating the right things, looking after your room, just little things like that, really.
I'm like, how is it like leaving your family? Like, because, bro, like, you hear people getting homesick, all of that kind of stuff. So,
yeah,
how was that transition?
I think for me at 16 to leave my family, leave my home, was a big thing. But I sort of saw it as to be in the career I want to be and to be where I am, I'm gonna have to do this at some stage. You know, footballers always moving around, get bought by so and so club, you're gonna have to move anyway. Yeah. So if this is what I'm gonna want to do, I've got to get used to it, sort of thing. So I just sort of put my head down and said, look, this is what I want to do. If I have to leave, home at an early age, that's something that I'm gonna have to be ready for. But it can be hard at first, obviously leaving, not getting used to your mum's cooking anymore, or you know, seeing your family or whatever it was, or your friends who are local. But you get used to it. You know what I mean? When it's something you want to do, I think you put that to one side. You have your priorities, and I think that's just what I had to do.
So what's the differences between? There must be London and Derby. At London, you've got all these enmities. Everything's not too far away. So like, how have you sort of had to transition from the London life to the Derby life?
I think just the area really is a lot different. Like you said, London to Derby, it's like get used to different people, different areas. You think, I don't know certain people from here. But like you said, it's like you're getting used to anything. Like you get used to a new club, you get used to the area. You meet people on the way. So it's like, it's good to have good boys around you as well. So I'm able to meet new people, not go out, but get used to the area and stuff. But it's a bit different where it's a lot more sort of greenery, I guess, more parks and stuff like that. But it's Derby's still a nice area. Still good area. Different to London though, of course.
So how were your like friendship groups? Because we've had players in the past, they've come on, and they've sort of had to say like, we've had to like, not ditch our friends, but like we've had to tell them in no uncertain way that, listen, I'm trying to pursue a football career, so I'm going to be ghost for a bit. I'll enjoy my career and stuff. Then we can come link up it. Kind of thing. Mm. But from speaking to you, you seem to have come from a good area, Kingston. You know, it's a nice area. It's not like the roads.
Yeah, of course.
So how have you had to be with your like friends?
I have a sort of a good friendship group, really, who I still speak to, PlayStation and stuff like that, I still keep in contact with. So it's like, for me, when I go to Derby, I'm focused on football and stuff like that. But then when I come home, like now, I'm able to just relax, you know, link up with a few of them. But I never cut anyone off, you know. I'm still open to speak to or meet whoever. Squad. My friends are still keeping, it's almost like I never left sometimes. Just come home and you just see them and everything's like I've been living there for ages. But I think it's a good thing, really, where you're able to keep that distance and still keep that same relationship with them. But it's I've got good friends, you know. I've got when I did make my debut, two of my friends even came up to Derby. They heard that notice. I think it was around midday, maybe. It's like, yeah, we're coming, bro.
Straight. So midday on the day of your debut, and you told them and they jetted up straight.
That's even enough. So the day I made my debut, I was supposed to play for the 21s. So I think we had Leicester in the King Power Stadium for the 21s, and I was sort of playing. So I've arrived like morning time, maybe just before like 11 o'clock, maybe, to get some food. And I got pulled into the office before, and the manager just says, look, you're on the bench for the first team tonight.
When you say the manager, you can't just pull that.
This is the 21's manager.
Oh, okay.
This is the 21's manager.
Okay, cool. But,
I mean, even the first time I went into his office, that was scary for me. Even.
Okay.
So my first time I was on the bench was Swansea away. So that was another travel which my friends did as well, down to
Wales.
Yeah. So that was a big trip for them. But when I first got told, I remember it like it was yesterday. I was just sitting in the canteen eating my food, and one of the staff come up to me and goes, oh, the gaffer wants to speak to you. And in my head I'm thinking,
so wait, the under 23's guy?
No,
this was
Rooney at the time.
Okay.
So they said, oh, the gaffer wants to speak to you. I was thinking, at first I think, Carlos, what have you done?
Yeah.
Thinking, are you in trouble? What have you done? I'm thinking, what have I done? But I got in there and he just said, look, you know, we're happy with you. You've been doing well recently and we'd like to put you on the bench. And I just froze. I didn't even know what to do. At that age, when you get told that, I was just like, I didn't even know what to say. I just, on the spot, froze.
So, you know, it's mad because, like, obviously the gaffer, respect, manager, but when I think of Wayne Rooney, I think of best English player of the last 20 years, maybe. So, like, when he's telling you something like that, I know he's the manager, but this is Wayne Rooney, the great player as well. So, like, how was you feeling, bro?
I think even going to the club and seeing him every day was a... I just think, wow, I'm sick. That's Rooney. Every time you see him, you still get shocked. I don't, like you said, I don't really see him as Gaffer all the time. Sometimes that's the way Rooney's sitting in front of me. But yeah, sometimes you don't realize how big he was, even now. Like when we traveled away, the amount of people that would be like, oh, picture, stuff like that. I think you forget how big he is. But I think, given his reputation and his past, and obviously the player that he is, I think no matter what he said to you, you listen, sort of thing. So for him to even know my name for me was massive. Thinking, yeah, but yeah, when I first got pulled into the office, and I was just thinking, nah, don't be anything bad, please.
Yeah, so even like just talking about him as a manager, because again, we've got this perception as fans or from the outside of him being a player going into management. Like, what would you say his sort of style is? Because you get the tacticians, you get the arm around the shoulder, man managers. Where would you say he fits into that? Or what was your experience with him?
For me, because I was really there for like a short period, I wouldn't really be able to tell you sort of tactically wise. I think he did like to set up well. There was also an assistant manager called Liam Messina.
Oh, he's at Hull now.
Which is where Malcolm is as well. Yeah, so he was really helpful as well. I think they were both quite good player managers. That was good, like you said, putting your arm around you and be able to speak to you. But yeah, there were just people that you're comfortable around, you know, you'd be able to speak to them if you had anything going on, anything like that. But it was just, I think it was just always good for any of them to come up to me and speak to me and just say, look, we want you to do this, or you're doing well, or just hear any information, even if it was bad. I thought it was just something I like to hear from, like you said, I call him Gaffer, but from Wayne Rooney at the time, it was just different, very different. Mm-hmm.
So I want to speak a bit about you in terms of you as a player. If I had to like read a player profile, what would I see?
I think you see, I'd say I'm a quite dynamic sort of player. I like to use my pace quite a lot.
So is that from either wing? Is that like?
From either side, I play on the right or the left. But you know, I like to say I'm versatile. I'm able to play. I played in the 10 role quite a bit. I'm not the tallest, but I can play out front a bit, you know, make runs.
Force nine.
But my main position I play is on the right recently. Yeah, as a right winger most of the time. Or I can play on the left, you know, if I want to cut in on my right foot, which is something that I've done before. But yeah, I think you just see sort of quite a dynamic, quick, flary. I like to express myself when I go onto the pitch. But yeah, I think that's what you'd see.
I think that's needed in the modern game. Like, you see front threes and they all exchange, ones on the left, they go central, right. So like, in terms of players that you're actually like looking at, not to model your game on, but just to get those sort of like little pointers, like which players do you say you're like studying?
Players like Sterling, really, I think. Yeah. Massive for me. Not sort of like small, nippy players who, you know, got that flair about them, and he can play anywhere, I think, in the front line. And I think even just modernising players like that, just realising how good they are and just watching their clips back and trying to develop that into your game is massive for young players. And I think young players always say, like, they want to be like the Neymars and stuff like that. But I think even players like Gnabry are like to watch. I think he's a great player. The positions he gets in the Bundesliga and stuff like that, I think it's just good to watch players like that. But I'd probably say Sterling, yeah. I like that he plays.
Yeah, another player I wanted to ask you on is that Bukayo Saka. For me, dominating the Premier League this season. For me, probably the best player in the Premier League this season with Haaland and Odegaard. So, like, when you watch him, do you think, like, oh, I'm learning kind of thing?
I think he's a massive inspiration, I think. Even for young players, when I watch him, I just think, you know, wow, you think, yeah. Especially, you don't realise his age sometimes. When you look at players, you think, oh, wow. You know, like, you're dominating the Premier League. But you look back and you think, this is still a young player, you know, he's still got a lot to go. So, yeah, I do look up to players like that, really, and just see what they're doing. And you think how quickly you can go from where he was before to where he is now, which is what I'd obviously love to see myself. But it's someone you can look up to, definitely.
I wanted to, because I know we didn't dive deep into your debut. I want to know how the whole day was. Obviously, I know you got pulled into the manager's office. So, like, what was the emotions all throughout the game? Did you know you were coming on, or you just thought, I'm going to be on the bench?
Sorry to cut you off there.
No worries, bro. That's cool.
We've been cutting you off.
But Yeah, so like I said, we had Leicester away for the 21. So as I knew it, I slept the whole night just knowing I was going to be involved in the game tomorrow. It was even still a big game for me, you know, in the King Power Stadium. Getting used to playing in stadiums like that was a big thing for me. But got in, had my food. And then just before we have a meeting as a team to go through, you know, what formation you're going to play, information on the other team or so what. You just pulled me in before and just said, there's been, I think it was Ravel who got injured at the time. Yeah. Or I think it might have been illness. I can't fully remember. But he just said, he's pulled out the squad. So the gaffer said he wants you in there. And I just thought, where did I go from here? So I think I even went home and just sort of called everyone. I was calling my family. I was calling my parents. I was like, Mum, I'm on the bench. Dad, I'm on the bench. Mm-hmm. And for them, it was just like, we'll come up straight away. It was just, we'll drop everything. We'll come into it. And I think it was an 8 o'clock kickoff. So I sort of had that spell from 11, 12 o'clock, just through to kickoff, just not stressing, but like thinking about it, like this is a massive sort of opportunity for me.
And it was against Fulham as well, who were like,
they were top
running,
of the time.
Yeah, running away.
And to make, what made it worse also, like even being in the dressing room was crazy. But I think if they had won the game against us, they would have got automatic promotion. Okay. So that was one of the things where Rooney said in the changing room before, he said, I'm not going to see them celebrating on our pitch after this game. So, but even just being in and around the change room, the first team change room, being in that environment at such a young age was massive. But yeah, when it got down towards the day, I was just, you know, I couldn't stop shaking. I was just in the change room, just ready to go out. But I think once you step on that pitch, everything just blocks out for me. I don't even hear the crowd. I don't hear anything. I'm just focused on the ball and stuff like that. But
so did you know you were coming on?
Yeah, cause
you didn't know, you just walked bench.
I didn't know anything. I just got told I was on the bench. That's the only sort of information I got told.
Because I want to know the process from when the coach turns round and they're like, Carlos, that's like, what's happening there? Like, are you like, shit, I don't even have my things on? Or like,
so for me, I was just like, just make sure you got everything. So I had everything on, ready, prepared. But I think my shin pads were on the bench or whatever. But I just remember warming up and with a few players around me, and I just hear like, like that. I'm thinking, I look back, is he looking at me? It's me. I'm like, in my head, I'm thinking, I'm coming on. I says, run back, you know, get ready. And I think it was sort of late stages in the game, so I'm sort of just thinking, just come on, just, it's just a big opportunity for you, but trying to relax, but stay focused at the same time. You know,
so what's the mindset? Is it, let me do a bit, let me just make sure I complete this part? What's the...
For me, I think, got to settle the nerves. As soon as you come on, just make sure you make a pass or make sure you do something. Because if you come on and you try to be overconfident or overdo it, I think that can sort of be negative to you. So I think I thought, just come on, relax, make a few passes or whatever it is, just see the game out, or just don't do anything stupid was the first thing that came into my head. But yeah, that was an unreal experience. Even at the end, when we got the win at the end, 2-1 against Fulham, we were top of the league at the time. It was just amazing. The stadium was jumping, everything was just crazy.
So how important were the experienced players? I know Curtis Davis, you know, top centre-back for the Premier League Championship, and Tom Lawrence as well. How important were those two players?
I think Kurt was always a great character, especially in and around the training ground, I think, because his experience, I mean, when I was little, I used to watch him, and even Chezzy, James Chesters, who's at the club now, they used to play together, and I used to watch them back at Hull when I was little all the time. So it's weird when you see players like that, and then you're in and around the environment. I think players like that are needed at any club, especially for any young player, just players that you can speak to. Just, I remember him speaking to me before we even went out to the Fulham game. Just like, always be ready. If you come on, you know, just stay calm, do your thing. You know, I've seen you do it. You know, just do it again. To even hear those words from a player like that is massive. It's massive.
So in terms of, you know, this season, what would you say is next for you?
For me, I think I just really need to push on. I think I've had that taste of that the first team environment, and I think once I've had that, I just want to get that again, really. But obviously, it's not going to be handed on a plate. It's something that I've got to earn myself. So I think for me, it's just get my head down, work hard, and just when an opportunity does come, which I hope it does, just be ready to take it.
I wanted to speak about the season where you made your debut last season. How was that for a young player? Because I know, obviously, from reading the press, the media, there was a lot of like uncertainty, points deductions, you know, younger players having to be brought up. Like, what was the message to the younger boys? Because I can imagine for like 6, 7, 8 of you, must have to be just thrust into that situation, fighting relegation, a lot of pressure, things that you can't control, that's not of your doing. So how was that?
I think it was, it's very different because I think a few of the boys that were there, I think Luke Plange, another one who's, who's doing well at the moment.
Striker Palace.
Lincoln now, in League One. So even players like that, I think when once they were given the opportunity, like you said, Malcolm earlier, once they were given the opportunity, I think they just took it. And they thrived in that sort of environment. So I think it was the young players that season, last season, were really influential for the club, really. So I think, although it wasn't negative, that the financial deficit and not being able to bring players in, I think it was a massive positive at the same time. I think we had to flip players like that who maybe wouldn't have got the opportunity if the club was in the right place, and they happily did, and it did well. I think even for me, players like myself, being able to get that opportunity or first team where I might not have if they had the money to sign players and stuff like that, I think it was great. But yeah, I think it was really good that young players got the opportunity that last season just to step on.
It's interesting. I wanted to ask your view on, I know maybe last season there was a lot of talk about Ethan, the Arsenal youngster. I think it was thrown in at, was it 15? And a lot of people after were like, come on, what's Arteta doing? This is, you're too young. Like, you've been put into the action. Now you're in under 18, under 21. Do you think there can be a case where players are just thrown in before their time and it puts a bit of pressure on them? Like, okay, you've made your debut. You're the next big thing. Where is he now? What's happening? And people in the academies, what's happening to him? Why isn't he playing?
Yeah.
Do you think there can be the case of that where it's almost like you have to live up to that expectation?
Not really, to be honest.
Okay.
For me, I always think, if you're good enough, you're old enough. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You've probably heard from everyone, but I think it's true. I think, you know, players get more physically developed at the age of 15, like he was. And I think if he was ready in that environment, I don't know him personally, but if he was ready, if he was doing well in that environment, then I don't see why you wouldn't give a player like that an opportunity. I think sometimes you do get that backlash of where you have to live up to that environment. But I think as a footballer, that's something that you've got to always be ready for. I think being put in the spotlight or be able to say, you know, you got to kick on now. I think that's something that you just have to be used to. You've got to be ready for. So I think if you're making your debut at like 15, 16, if you're my age, all right, if people are going to say, oh, he has to be doing well now, that's something that you've got to live up to. I think that's something that's going to be expected of yourself anyway. So I don't see it as they're taking the mick or anything. If they play young players, I think if they're rewarded for it, I don't see why not.
Yeah, that Eve is going to be a special talent. So he's got a big future. I just want to talk a bit about your international career. Where do you stand on that at the moment?
So I think for me, whilst I was at Chelsea, I wasn't really getting any, obviously my dream would be to play for England, of course, but I wasn't really getting any light from there. I didn't get any camps or anything like that. So for me, it was more, my mum was born in Gibraltar in Spain. So that's somewhere where I've not lived, but I've been there loads of times, and I know that place really well. So I think that's a place that's close to heart for me. And when the opportunity did come where they asked me to play for me, it was sort of just like it was perfect for me. Really, it was an opportunity to get international experience which I hadn't had before, which opened up a different eye from other people to be able to say, okay, look, he's representing a country now. So I think it was great for me at the time. Really, I think I played a few games for the under 17s, and I had a few opportunities to push on, but I sort of thought, I've had that experience now, let me just focus back on the club and stuff like that.
When you say opportunities to push on, does that mean higher age group or...?
Yeah, I think there was a few 21s and first team camps after that, which I think I could have gone to, but it was just more, I've got that taste of now, I want to focus back on the club, making sure I'm back, I'm performing for the club, which is ultimately the most important thing. And then when that opportunity does come again, if I were to go away with Gibraltar, I'm happy to be able to take it. But I think they've got a few games coming up for the under-21s, which I am sort of looking into. So we'll just have to see in the future, really, where that leads me.
So what's your take on, like, the Gibraltar national team? Because over here, there's a bit of a snobbery, in my opinion, against the likes of San Marino, Gibraltar. They're like, oh yeah, they get beat 10-0.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Mm.
You're obviously inside the rooms. You're part of that association. For those cynics and critics that look down on Gibraltar, what do you think are the benefits of Gibraltar, like, competing against, like, the top nations?
I think, like any country, I mean, I think Gibraltar's not got the financial uplift as other countries, of course, being the size and the population that have the maybe the depth of players and stuff like that. But I still think being an underdog in a country like that, I think it's great, really. You get the opportunity to play against players from a lot of other countries and of big sort of high sort of big profiles and stuff like that. So for me, I sort of see it as a good thing. You know, I like being an underdog. I like being able to say, you know what, you might think you're all that, but we'll see. So when I see that, I don't really see it as, I know what you mean when people say, oh, San Marino, they get beat and stuff. Sometimes they do, but to be in and around that environment, you don't really see it as, oh, I'm just going to get beat today. You want to see it as, or even on a personal note, I want to be able to show, let's say you're playing against the likes of Holland or something, I want to show them, you know, okay, this is what I've got sort of thing. So I don't really see it as I'm going there to get beat or whatever. I'm just to sort of show, tell them that I have and express that.
Yeah, so how is it in Gibraltar? Because, again, we only see it from the English side. And as I said, there's that snobbery. But I'm sure for countries like Gibraltar and San Marino, it must be a big day. Like, England are coming to visit us. This is...
Yeah.
How is it from that side?
Yeah, it is sort of like a big thing where they're able to host games and stuff like that. I mean, I remember when Holland came over, even for the 21s, that was sort of a big thing. Because I think the population's only about 33,000. In Gibraltar, so I think when they have the opportunity to host games like that, I think it's great for the country, even just to get that exposure to big teams, big players coming over. But I also think they don't take it too much as, okay, yeah, we got so and so coming today, don't look into it. I think you got to still have that sort of rivalry and think, you know, we're here for a game, we're not here to sort of idolize them and stuff like that sort of thing. So, but yeah, I think it is a big thing for the country, but I think you got a game at the end of the day they have to play, so.
Nice. So in terms of like your contract situation at Derby, are you still a scholar? Have you signed a pro? Like, what's happening in terms of?
So for me, that's something that, you know, goes on behind the scenes. I don't really look into that too much. I'm just focused on.
Oh, so are you still a scholar or?
At the moment, yeah, I'm still a scholar, but you know that.
So I think your contract ends end of this season, right? 30th of June, 2023.
I believe. So at the moment, I'm still a Derby player, which is the main thing. Contract negotiations always happen sort of behind closed doors and stuff like that. So that's not something that I really talk about too much.
Top answer, because this is a training. You're learning well.
I'm not gonna talk into that too much.
Like the agent, deal with that behind the scenes.
You've learned something to tell us. Those are the lines. You've learned.
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, I mean.
So has there been talks?
Don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, we'll see. But like I said, I'm still a Derby player at the moment, and that's the main thing. I'm just focused on myself, really, just pushing on, getting to the places I was last season, sort of thing.
Yeah. So we're gonna move on to life outside of football. Obviously, as Des said mentioned earlier, you Gen Zs, your brains on another planet compared to us. So, what do you like getting up to, bro?
For me, I like to. I'm quite a chill person, really. I don't really go out too much. I don't really like all that sort of party life sort of things. Okay. I'm just sort of chilled. I like to do practical things, you know, go out, watch a film or stuff like that. But after games, I just like to relax, really, just sit, take the day after just to recover. But I like to go out with my friends and stuff like that. But it's more practical things, maybe.
Well, you started the driving lessons.
When you say practical, isn't it? Have you started your practical driving?
I have. I've had a few lessons.
How you finding it?
No, it's good. It's good.
Are you on parking reverse? What's it?
Reverse round the corner. Yeah. What are you doing? Manual or automatic?
Manual.
You got good parents.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. My parents can never let you do automatic tests, but. I think it's a good thing, you know, being able to start being more independent, being able how to drive. For me, you know, I can stay at the training ground for longer. I could even come in on my off days just to do a little bit. So that's something that I'm working on the side, but probably need to push it on a bit more now. But you know, that time will come and I'll be driving soon, hopefully.
So what would you say is like a main interest outside of football? Would you say like another hobby?
It's a weird question. You know, I think my life just sort of evolves around football, really. I don't really look into anything too deeply alongside football, but I do like to just play other sports in my spare time. I think I forgot what it's called. It's like a paddle. That was it. It's
like okay.
Paddle tennis. Even stuff like that is quite fun. You know, go with a few mates or even I went with my Diggs people even just played against them and stuff like that. But it's good to just look into other sports like that. Play ping pong is a great thing to do in your spare time. It gets a bit challenging in the training ground when you're playing it.
Hand out.
Yeah,
I saw you played the other month, and I served it.
So he's the better one.
You know. No. You know what's funny? You know what's funny? When we were in college together, obviously it was neck and neck. But I have to be honest, recent, obviously does bring it up. But in college, we used to have some epic battles. We used to have some back and forth. Right? Yeah, obviously, maybe ages and all my time now. So I've been getting some whippings. But
last time we'll be pulling these. I'll be like, oh.
got a little ache in his calf.
Yeah.
Like,
that's it.
I wanted to ask you about, in terms of being a young player now, you know, branding, social media. We see younger players, I don't know, Bashir Humphreys, I saw the other day, he done like a TikTok that went viral, you know. I know it's Ramadan right now, it's praying, training, and that sort of got like a good reaction because people are like, wow, this guy's serious, like he's very on his career kind of thing. So how important is social media to you?
For me, I've not really been a kind of big social media guy, really. I haven't really been one to be posting my life and stuff like that. I like to sort of just stay quiet, and then when I do have something to talk about, I'll do that. But for people like you said, Bashir, who's using it well, I think that's just a good example of using social media positively. I think that's what I'd like to sort of to use social media like that, where I'm posting positively and getting sort of followers from that sort of type of thing, rather than obviously the bad things that can happen on social media nowadays. But I think that's just another positive example of how I'd also like to use social media, just showing people, you know, the day-to-day life of what you do as a footballer, as a sportsman, and what you do sort of thing, which can get a lot of interest, I guess.
No, definitely. That's sick. And let's say if you're going on date night with the missus. I'm not saying you have a missus, but going on date night with the missus, what's the drip? What's the outfit?
So I don't like to be too show and tell sort of thing. I like to just sort of smart, casual. Color scheme is a massive thing for me. As long as it's matching, it's all right.
So what are you saying? Is it like a white shirt or just jacket?
For me, it's always a cargo's jumper, sort of hoodie, maybe sort of thing.
Okay.
Maybe not too smart like that. Actually, okay. Not having been the one.
What
are
the kicks of choice? Is it Jordan 4s, is it Dunks, Travis Scott's, you know, it's, you know, with the fashion, it's on another level.
I feel a few ballers come out with some big shouts, but for me, it's just even casual ones. Air Force 1s is nice. I like 4s at the moment too far. I got a few pairs.
Okay, what colours are you? Have you got?
The UNC 4s, I like to wear them a lot. I got the neon greys as well. So there's a few rotations. You're
starting
there,
that kick game from early.
We always talk, me and Dot, about the younger generation now. The standard is mad high.
So like, it was
16,
before.
17, you got to have Dior's, you got to have Louis Gucci. It's like the pressure that to keep up with the Joneses is mad. Like, how do you see that? Do you sort of feel that sort of pressure, or are you someone that just, I'll do my own thing? What you're doing over there, that's your problem.
I mean, for me, I like making sure I look good. I like having nice things because I look after it at the end of the day. So I think if I'm able to treat myself to a new pair of shoes, whatever, I'll happily do that. But I don't really feel a pressure to be able to do that. I think that's something where if I'm older, which hopefully I am, and I've had a good career, then I'm able to treat myself to like a pair of Dior's or something like that. But at the moment, I think it's just, you know, just treat myself every now and then, you know, make sure I look nice and treat myself to whatever pair of shoes I want, but I don't really feel the pressure to be able to spend a lot of stuff on clothes and stuff like that. I think I like what I like, and it's like you said, if they're doing that, that's their sort of choice. But for me,
because this generation now, man, it's
you see all sorts of 14 year olds wearing Dior 22s, and you think,
yeah, they've got their LV man bags, everything, man, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, for me, it's more. When I'm older, I'll be able to treat myself to stuff like that. But for now, just keep it simple.
Focus on the football.
Yeah, definitely.
And in terms of like music, what are you rocking with? Because for me, when you come into my whip, it's straight Afro beats, Ashake, Wizkid, Burna Boy, whoever. But you youngsters will be telling me little this, little that. Yeah. So who you rocking with at the minute?
To be fair, I like to rotate different genres. Really, Afro beats are massive one in the change room, especially. But I'm into quite like American raps, like Lil Baby, stuff like that. Gunna, I think those are the main ones for me. I don't really listen to too much UK.
What about Lil Durk? Are you messing with Lil Durk or not really?
Nah, yeah. I can't see too much for me. But I stick to the main ones. But I do like American music. But it's a random shout. But I like French music as well.
Okay.
I think it's really calming and it sort of gets me focused before a game. I like listening to French.
You understand
music.
French?
No, actually, okay. So they could be saying all sorts in that song. I'll be honest with you, they could
you're
be saying.
You're not hearing that.
I'm just hearing the beat and I like it. But yeah, before a game, I like to listen to French music. Really. It's just nice, calming, gets you in the mood. It's got like, it's of course like that Afrobeat sort of background to it. So I like French music, but yeah, I rotate it to be fair.
What about UK artists? I know you said you're not really messing with a lot, but if there's like, let's say two UK artists that you think. I think I'll know one of them. But yeah. I'll wait to see if you say it.
The people in the background are shaking their head saying, no, it's not. No, listen.
It is? Okay. No. I was going to say Central C. I was going to make that.
I don't personally. I don't know about you guys, but I don't.
For us, it's Giggs. Giggs is the goal
even like old Skepta tunes I like listening to. Skepta obviously may not before my time. I say my time like I'm a man, but Skepta I like songs like that. I'm not really into this modern day D-Block Europe. I don't think that's not
okay.
Really, I like a few of the songs, but for me I just like to stick to the known songs that I like listening to before games and stuff like that. But I don't really venture into UK rap like that. I probably should, to be fair, but
it's your preference.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to ask you, like, okay, if we were to plan out the next 12 to 18 months, what would that look like for you in an ideal world in terms of your career?
So I think we have, after this season, we got a big sort of pre-season ahead of me where I was lucky enough to spend pre-season with the first team this season, so I think that was a big thing for me, making sure I'm fit, ready when I come back into the club. So that's the first sort of steps, making sure I end the season well. I'm currently injured as well with my quad, so making sure that's all strong when I come back and I'm ready for the season ahead. So for me, that's just starting the season well, coming in fit, making sure I'm in the right condition, right physique and everything, and hit the ground running really. So I think if I do get that opportunity to have a few sessions pre-season with the first team and I do well, that's something that I need to look forward to. But for me, it's just make sure everything's right for now, ready for next season and come hit the ground running.
Yeah, you've been absolutely amazing. Like, by the way you speak, you're going to have like a massive career, man. And we're going to be supporting and following your journey, bro. And thank you for being open and honest. You've been a fantastic guest.
You never think you're so young, but I think the younger generation now, you're so advanced. I don't know, when we hear 70, we think, yeah, won't be able to talk.
Bro, we went out today there with a 19-year-old, knows exactly what he wants to do, want to do this for my business.
Yeah.
It's just
scary. The younger generation, you guys, it's impressive.
No, but thank you for having me on. I really do appreciate this opportunity. You guys have been great as always, so thank you.
No, I love, bro.
Love, bro. Thank you. We've got a closing tradition on this podcast. I know you're 17, but I'm gonna still put you on the spot because that's what we do.
Okay.
So obviously you've experienced, you know, the platform, the Beautiful Game podcast, and you've, you know, experienced being interviewed by myself and Dej. So if you had to recommend maybe a teammate or friend that you know in football that will potentially be a good fit for this platform, who would you recommend?
I'd probably say, my Bayo Fapati, you know. He plays for Derby at the moment. I live with him as well.
Okay.
In Diggs. He's a character. He's funny. I think he's like me in a sense where he's able to talk for his age, where he's not someone who's going to sit and give you simple answers. So I think that'd be a good character for you guys to look into. But that's pretty right.
Cool. So we're going to leave it there. That's another episode of the Beautiful Game podcast. Over and out. Peace.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.